Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Ham Nation is brought to you by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, visit audiblepodcasts.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 52, June 12th, 2012. Outside, kids, it's field day. Hello, everyone from South Mississippi. Ham Nation is on your computer and in your iPod and in your iPad and everywhere else that you can see us. How y'all doing? Don Wilbanks, AE5DW from South Mississippi. And just to the north of me a couple of hours is George, W5JDX. George, are you in here? Come on in and say hi.
Yeah, good evening, Don, and everyone else on the crew and all the viewers out there. It's been kind of rainy around here. I don't know how it's been down there, Don, but we were without electricity last night, so it's good to be back on the grid.
Yeah, we had about 5 inches of rain, I think, over the weekend. It was really, really bad. In fact, I wasn't even sure that we were going to be on tonight because when it rains real heavy, my internet goes way, way down. But it came back up, and we're all here. So let's head out now to the West Coast and see if we can pick up Gordon West, WB6NOA. Hello, Gordo.
Well, hi to Ham Nation and listeners and viewers. It is not raining here. It's a bright, sunny day, and we're about ready to jump in the ocean after the broadcast. Go ahead.
Very good. And heading back towards the east a little bit, we'll check in and stop in Colorado and see if Amanda, K1DDN, is in here. Amanda, how are you tonight?
I'm great, Don. And Gordo, George, good evening, everybody. Not too bad. Smoke's, it's clearing up a little. It's clearing up.
Yeah, Colorado's on fire right now, huh?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Wow. Well, try to keep your keep everything moist over there, so you don't combust. And of course, we'll hear from Cheryl, K9BIK, with the chat room stuff. And we've got a jam packed show for you tonight. We've got a lot of things to cover. We're going to be talking about field day. We've got a lot of videos to cover. We've got a lot of pictures. It's going to be a jam packed show tonight. George, go ahead.
Yeah, it is going to be quite busy tonight. We've got a lot going on. And Julian, he's not here this week, is he, Gordo? But he sent us a little package.
Julian did, and it's called Good Grounds, and it goes along with us ready to jump in the blue Pacific. So if the studio is ready, let's tune in to Julian and Hannah and the gang about 2 weeks ago in Hawaii establishing a good high-frequency ground.
November 3, Julian, Foxtrot / Kilo Henry 6, beach of Maui, over, over.
Oh, wow! Julian makes it to Russia. They told him to stand by. That's better than nothing. Would you like to see a little bit about our install? Let's take a look, and we'll start from the ground on up.
All right, see you in a few.
Of course, a good ground is always important for our maritime mobile sort of on land antenna. And what we have is simply an extension of the ground, which is a good flat surface stainless steel knife, hose clamp that is clamped onto the knife. This is the Outbacker antenna, thanks to Don W6 GPS 3-piece, so we can break it down to get it on the aircraft carry-on. Coax, and we've sealed up the feed point so that a little bit of seawater won't break down the coax. And, of course, our rig today is the ICOM 706 Mark IIG, and it's performing just terrific. We do our logging, and our first contact was Juliet Hotel 4 Lima Hotel Tango in Japan. Not very good riding. We got plenty of voltage, 12.54 from the ham source digital volt and amp meter, drawing not much current. And We'll give you more information about this, but this is the NiCad power supply, good old 12-volt battery in there, and that's going to run us for about 4 to 5 hours here at the seashore.
Wow. Well, they finally got married on the world's greatest, best ground. And congratulations, Julian and Hannah. And as we get ready for short shots here. Wait a minute. On our magic red. Hello. It's a bad connection. Julian, it's a bad connection. You know, don't you hate it when you have a bad connection? Now, Field Day is next weekend, not this coming weekend, but weekend after next, the 23rd and 24th. So let's go out and check your connections. And here's some short shots just to remind you of what to look for a great connection. All right, let's roll those Gordo short shots. First of all, trap antennas, you need to sweep them with your SWR analyzer. That means you can take it up to the roof and do a check of the traps. And connections on your 12-volt power supply, tighten them up because after a while they get loose and you might lose a volt or two. So tighten up the connection. Anderson connectors, they're great at good current ratings, but at low current, such as charging a solar panel, they get iffy unless you plug them in and unplug them and exercise them. Again, there is the SWR analyzer. And if you're using the analyzer and you see the needle go up and down and up and down and up and down as you're sweeping the band, that tells you you've got either an open or a short. Same thing with volume controls. You dust off that Field Day radio, spend about a half hour with the radio off, rotating that volume control back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And again, take a look at those traps. Don't you hate it when you have a bad trap on your Field Day beam antenna? Well, it's not that the trap goes bad, but right there, you see where that hose clamp is? That is squeezing a lousy connection after a couple of years in the salt air. So wiggle it, and that'll clean it up. Oh, here you go, the double male connections to a female barrel connection. We took the black tape off. And look what we found. Talk about a bad connection. This one really stinks because when you look under that black tape, you're probably going to find that there's moisture under there because the black tape by itself is not a great way to cover up a PL259. And look at this. The other day, I took out one of my Field Day antennas and found I couldn't even undo the connection because it had welded itself shut because of corrosion. Again, another lousy connection. And solar panels for Field Day, if you left that panel out in the backyard for a year, chances are when you undo that fuse connection that was left exposed to the elements, you're going to find high resistance. And that's going to mean, yeah, look at that, all rusted up, a lousy connection. I picked up 3 extra amps just by cleaning this off, putting it back together, and it ran the solar panel great. And George will appreciate this. Those of you with soldering irons out at field day, you've really got to get them hot. Tighten up those two nuts that you see there that'll squeeze down on the soldering tip, and that'll make sure that you have good transfer of heat. And again, next week we're going to talk about how to undo snags in the coiled cords, how to properly display and set up your coax cable so you don't end up with a mess like this when you plan to set up quickly at field day. And again, all of you, go out there and undo that black tape around the double males to the barrel connector, and you'll be surprised as to what it looks like. And what you're looking for is that white powdery stuff. Actually, it's what you're not looking for. That's a sign that moisture has gone into the coax cable and has ruined it. And that's why the meter went up and down and up and down. Any connection like this is soon to fail if it's left up for more than just the field day weekend. So double check that connection. Get some of that coax seal from Universal Radio and wrap that coax seal around this connection, and then you won't have problems. And again, the PL259, make sure it's got a Teflon, not a plastic that'll distort when you heat it up, but a Teflon insulation, not plastic, but Teflon. So buy an expensive, good coax cable connector. So that's Gordo with Short Shots, and give us your ideas as to what you might recommend for field day weekend after next, and we'll try and play them here next week. Have a great field day weekend after next, but this weekend, get prepared to clean up those bad I still hear you, Julian. I'll be right there. So clean up those bad connections. All right, Don, back to you.
Thank you, Gordo. Those are all great tips, and you got to make sure that you got those connections right. And the ground, of course, is the most important one because it creates the pathway. It's got to go one way before it comes the other way, and it can't go the other way unless it can get there or something like that. Just make sure you have your good ground. So now you'll notice that Bob Heil is not here tonight. That's because he is up in Cleveland, Ohio at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and I believe we have a little bit of video from Gordon. So let's swing on up to Cleveland now to the Rock Hall and see what K9 EID is up to. Alex?
Hi, this is Bob Heil, K9 EID, and today I'm in Cleveland. Sorry I'm not with everybody and not on the show, but I thought we'd take a little bit of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame here in Cleveland.
Great.
We've just been through the Les Paul display where you saw all kinds of wonderful things that he's developed from his steel string guitar, as he called it. It was great. Now we're looking at the replica of the Sun Studio where Elvis recorded. How simple it was. And I hope you enjoyed some of this stuff. I wish I could be with you guys tonight, but we're here with the Rock Hall this week and wanted to bring you a little bit of the excitement of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Wow, that's excellent stuff. I've never been to the Rock Hall. I mean, I've always wanted to go as an old radio guy. You know, you want to go to the Rock Hall at least once in your life, and I've got to do that. It's kind of like going to Dayton if you're a ham. You got to go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I have been to the Sun Studios three or four times, and I've held that RCA microphone that Elvis used, and I've stood there where the Million Dollar Quartet recorded all those great songs. And if you've never been to Memphis, you've got to go to Sun Studios and Graceland and everything else that's there. It's just, it's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So excellent. Thank you, Bob, and we look forward to you coming back next week. Right now, we've got a word, I think, from another well-known ham, and that's W6TWT. Leo has got a little word for us, a word from our sponsor, if you will.
Hey, I'm going to interrupt you hams for just a moment to talk about one of my favorite sites in the whole wide world, audible.com. I first discovered Audible when I was doing those long commutes from Tech TV, 2 hours or three or four sometimes on a really bad day on the road every single day. And then I found audiobooks. And originally I was getting boxes of cassettes, and then I found audible.com, and that transformed my life. I've been an Audible member since the year 2000, 12 years now, more than 500 books in my library. That's, by the way, one of the things I love about Audible. Those books stay in your library. You can listen to them anytime, forever. Visit audible.com right now and take a look at all of the fantastic choices You have over 100,000 books in every category, science fiction, fiction, history. I'm reading a book about World War II, a new history of the Second World War, based on information that we didn't have until we got the Russian records not so many years ago. And it's fascinating. It's called The Storm of War, a new history of the Second World War by Andrew Roberts. Highly recommended, but it's just one of 100,000 books. So here's the deal. Pick one. Anyone. That could be this one if you like history. And then go to audiblepodcast.com/hamnation, and you can get it for free. You'll be signing up for the gold account. That's a book a month, which is, I think, a great subscription. For it makes it more affordable doing it that way. But your first book's free. Your first month's free. You can cancel at any time and pay nothing. And that book is yours to keep forever. So you got all. So this was always the problem with cassettes. I never had enough time to listen to them all, not to mention broken cassettes. I love Audible. You download it, you got it instantly, you put it on any device, your iPhone, your iPod, your iPad, your many GPS devices. For all I know, Yaesu radios, I don't know, you can put them on almost anything. Audible Podcast, no, you can't put it on your radio. AudiblePodcast.com/HamNation. Listen to a great book tonight, thanks to Audible, absolutely free. Back to the hams, you guys, it's all yours.
Thanks, Leo. But you know what you can do? That Yaesu FTM-10 radio, which is their motorsport radio, the one that I have in my daily driver, a little VHF, UHF, it has an iPod connection. So you can actually run your MP3 player or iPod through that. So you can play it on your Yaesu radio, come to think of it. Thanks, Leo. We look forward to hearing you get on the air again real soon. Let's go ahead and check and see what has been happening in the news end of ham radio. And, of course, amateur radio newsline is what brings us that. So let me just jump into that and do it for you right now. From amateur radio newsline report number 1817, I've got your Ham Nation headlines for Tuesday, June 12, 2012. That's today. How convenient. In what has to be one of the strangest international legal issues involving a ham radio operator, famed German de-expedition leader Baldur Drobnicka, DJ6SI, has been arrested in Greece. But in a weird turn of events, he was permitted to return to Germany if he promised that he would come back to Greece for trial. According to news reports, 75-year-old Drobnicka was on holiday on the Greek island of Kos. That's where he was reportedly taken into custody for the crime of espionage, which was quickly reduced to operating amateur radio equipment. This even though Greece and Drobnicka's home country of Germany are both signatories to the CEPT Pan-European Amateur Radio Licensing Agreement. Now, even so, Greek news reports appear to indicate that DJ6SI was actually arrested under a 1929 Greek law covering illegal operation of radio telegraph equipment, even though the CEPT agreement would likely supersede the older law. Now, quite quickly, the espionage charge appeared to disappear, and the reduced charge under the 1929 law was implemented. And in another weird turn of events, DJ6SI was permitted to return to Germany, but told that he has to return to Greece to stand trial. That was June 7th. That has happened. And as several Greek hams have pointed out, DJ6SI would not have been permitted to leave the country if there were any real case or even any suspicion that he was engaged in spying activities. Now, we do have an update to the DJ6SI story. We've learned that he was found not guilty on two counts, convicted on one. The conviction is for his refusal to surrender his ham gear and laptop to the police. The info was really forthhand in that it ostensibly comes from his Greek-speaking lawyer from a ham who translated it to German, who in turn put it through Google English, which is kind of like hearing something from your third cousin. We're working to get a better translation with more detail. No word on penalties or appeals. You know how that stuff goes. We're trying to get to the bottom of it. The Radio Amateur Association of Greece issued an angry statement defending DJ6SI. They claim that the responsibility for the whole matter should be placed on the shoulders of the officer that ignored the laws and regulations and arrested him and led him to court. They've also placed blame on the prosecutor, who they say was a little quick to suggest his conviction based on a law passed in 1927 here in the year 2012. Now, for you brainiacs, the 2012 Mensa Annual Gathering and National Convention will be held July 4th through the 8th in Reno, Nevada, and the online Mensa Amateur Radio Special Interest Group will be sponsoring the special event station N7M. According to Bill Munsell, K1ATV of Mesa, Arizona, there'll be a field day type operation from the parking structure on top of the Silver Legacy Resort. There also may be a 2-meter station, possibly an amateur fast scan ATV station in the lobby of the Reno Ballroom for you brainiacs. The numbers are out. They show conclusively that attendance at the Dayton Hamvention is on the rise. Officially, 24,483.
That good news was announced by General Chairman Mike Coulter, W8CI, at the Dayton Amateur Radio Association meeting Friday night, June 1st. According to Coulter, it was an increase over last year. He attributed that in part to the excellent weather during Hamvention weekend. And it was nice, wasn't it, guys? W8CI also noted that many vendors reported excellent sales during the 3 days of Hamvention. Many restaurants, hotels, and motels reported increased sales that contributed to an estimated $10 million economic impact for the Dayton region. In his address to the club, Coulter said that Hamvention would not be possible without the 500-plus volunteers who manage every aspect of the event. And if you're not aware, the Dayton Hamvention is the largest amateur radio gathering in the world, one of the largest events of its type operated entirely by volunteers. And on a side note, not to be forgotten, a high-altitude balloon launch that was, again, part of Hamvention. The two-hour flight reached an altitude of over 87,000 feet, landed in a pasture about 8 miles southwest of the Hera Arena launch point. Ironically, the pasture was owned by a ham, Donald Foreman, AB8OS. Of course, they're already planning the 62nd Hamvention. That will be May 17, 18, and 19 next year, 2013. We're going to be there. We hope to see you there, too. And that'll do it from Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for nearly 35 years. The website is www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73, and we'll do this all again next time here on Ham Nation. So there you go. There's your news, guys.
Oh, that's great, Don. That was great news. And this past weekend, talk about numbers, Don. For those of you working the VHF-UHF contest, I mean, listen to the activity. I mean, band conditions were fabulous, and everything was going great. See, they were even polite. And then all of a sudden, listen to this. Hear that pulsing noise? I sniffed around the house, and guess what? It was a Maytag washer. So never do your washing on VHF, UHF weekend because the washers really create a noise. All right, Don, back to you.
So that wasn't you interfering with the airports again?
I'm not guilty on that one.
All right, Gordo. Thanks a lot. All right. Of course, Field Day coming up. It's all about emergency preparedness, and there's some emergency stuff going on in Colorado right now. There's a lot of wildfires out there. And Amanda, K1DDN, is out there in Colorado. What's going on with that, Amanda? How are you? Are you smoked out, or are you still with us?
I did clear the smoke. Thank you. It was just Jeff putting on some burgers on the grill. So I'm good there. But unfortunately, there are some Coloradoans that are not faring as well as we are. And I have to just point out APRS, you guys, what an amazing resource this is for you guys. All right. I do have some information on the High Park fire. First of all, we're about 43,000 acres burned right now. So, and it's about 15 miles west of Fort Collins. So, other than that, here in southern Colorado, we have no smoke, no damage, no burning. So you guys that have planned vacations out here in the next month, no worries. No worries whatsoever. But let's go back to the fire here. I have gotten contact with first Eugene Bentz. That's Gene Bentz. He is the EOC operator and resource net control. And his call sign is Kilo India 6, Mike Papa Zulu. And he came back to me today letting me know that they are providing, well, about 25 assistants are providing communications to the Forest Service, the Colorado State Patrol, Larimer County Sheriff, the Red Cross, and the Larimer County officials. And I think we have some screenshots here to show you from APRS. I'm not sure which one's coming up first, APRS.fi or AGW Tracker. AGW Tracker is up first. Thank you, Jeff, for your assistance. Okay, with that, you can see there are fire markers as well as an EOC marker, the incident command post marker, an American Red Cross shelter marker. These are so helpful for everybody that's traveling this way, maybe even going up to Wyoming. Who knows what you're going to run into, and it's really helpful to see those markers on there. And just to let you know, you guys, I did look down into New Mexico as they're having some hideous forest fires as well. And I did not see this kind of thing going on there. So I encourage anybody that is assisting with the fires down there in New Mexico, try to do the same thing. It's really helpful. And along with KI6MPZ, I believe it is, there is also KI0BJ. That's Rex Blaine out of Fort Collins as well. And he also set some markers out there for the fire markers. And also there was Kilo Bravo 8, Bravo Quebec November. And he also set some markers out there on APRS. So please check those out. And on APRS.fi, and in case you you look at that one instead of the AGW tracker, you can also see the same markers but different. It will get you aware of what's going on there. And I really hope to get some more information from these guys so I can share more with you guys about what's going on there. And 43,000 acres burned so far, over 100 structures gone, and only 5% contained. So do you guys have any questions, Gordo, George, Don there? Go ahead.
Wow, that is terrific, Amanda. And you know, the important part of APRS, this is the Kenwood, other radios will work APRS as well. Yaesu, ICOM has its own version of APRS. The AVMAP portable, these two pieces of equipment enable ham radio operators to provide quite an important function of seeing where the assets are for fighting that fire. So, Amanda, good work. Back to you, Amanda.
Thank you. And I did forget to mention that KI6MPZ, and that's Gene there. He also looks like he was a past military, maybe a former military in the Guard. He has said that APRS has done him so much good. He's got his guys out there in the field assisting other people. There's 500, you guys, firefighters on this job right now. Some federal, some National Guard, some just local volunteer. They work so hard. So he's got his guys out there with them, and he has them all on the map. So I really encourage you guys to go to APRS and check this stuff out. And to look on the maps, they update. Boy, when they beacon, I mean, it can update in 30 seconds. So make sure you check it out and try to learn from this so you guys can update your communities if something like this happens. Definitely the West, California, Arizona, Nevada, Utah, New Mexico. We need this so bad. So I'm glad that they're doing this. And along with that, Gordo, it's just an amazing update. So I'm glad that they're out there, and we hope to get some more information from them, and I'll keep you guys all updated. And if anyone has any questions on the APRS and how to do this kind of stuff, contact me first, and I'll put you in the hands of the right person. And Gordo also has some wonderful contacts for APRS information. So I'll send it back to you guys.
Thank you, Amanda. Excellent, excellent report. Gordo, anything to add? George, anything to add to that?
I cannot echo enough the fact that ham radio operators, we are there when the big one hits. And I know we've provided tremendous amounts of different types of equipment. And this little AVMAP APRS GPS tied into the Kenwood, powerful for those operators that are assisting the fire departments in spotting where different things are going down and where their resources are. So I'll turn it over to Don, and Don, I'll let you go ahead and see if George has more to add. And thanks again, Amanda, for APRS.fi. That's the spot to go to.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Gordo. Thank you. George, anything to add to that?
I can't really add much to that. You know, amateur radio is helpful in so many different emergency situations. And not this weekend, but the next, as we've been mentioning, is field day. And that's when we all get our gear out, dust it off, and get it on the air so that when an emergency does happen, we're ready for it. But, you know, Don and Gordo, last week we had someone in the chat room decide it was time to play Stump the Experts. And they asked us who created the dipole antenna, and none of us could really answer it. This week, though, we've got emails left and right from all kinds of people telling us that the inventor was Heinrich Hertz, who did it around 1886, and he did it in his pioneering radio waves experiment. So thanks, chat room and viewers, for sending us the answer to that question. We should have known it, but we didn't know it, did we, Gordo?
Oh, you're right about that. And George, you know who did the vertical? If Hertz did the horizontal, who came up with the vertical? Starts with M. Marconi. That's right. Back to you, George.
All right. Well, thanks. And there again, we learn some stuff ourselves, too, from time to time. And now we know who made the dipole. Well, this week for Smoke and Solder, we had so many different videos we were trying to get into the show. And a couple of them were on building things. So I'm going to hold off the segment I originally had planned to air today so that we can get these other great videos in. This first one comes from Tim, K3LR, and he's showing a method of putting on a PL259 connector that's quick. This is not the way I normally do it myself, but I can't argue with it because they're using them all over the K3LR contest station, and they work. So, Alex, if you've got that video ready to roll, let's look at it.
Okay, so we're going to take our brand new 83-1SP connector out of the bag. And it's in a sealed bag from Amphenol because it is the body is silver plated. So to keep the oxidation from causing corrosion before we're ready to use it, it comes in the two pieces, the shell and the body of the connector. We're actually going to take and assemble this so that it is fully assembled before we go ahead and strip our RG8 coax. So here we have our piece of RG8. This is good quality Belden 8237. It's really an RG213 equivalent as a solid dielectric in the center. And we're going to take and measure using the PL259 that's assembled and actually come back just to the rear of the body of the connector. And then we're going to take and strip this. Now you see that we have the shield. The shield is very shiny, and that indicates that this cable is new. You don't want to use any corroded shields on your coax cable. We take the shield all the way back and fold it over the back of the outer covering, and we expose the center conductor insulator. And you can see that. We've got that exposed. We're going to actually create a little space in here, and we're using some good Scotch 33 tape, and we'll take and put three wraps around our dielectric, and then we'll take our strippers and actually take the dielectric off right at the edge of the tape. And here it comes off very nicely so that the center conductor is tightly wound. And that makes it very easy to actually take and solder it. And we're going to use some good solder here with our 25-watt welder iron to actually tin the center conductor of our coax cable. And now we're ready to put the connector on. So we take the fully assembled silver-plated connector and we slide it back on the cable until the center conductor of the coax cable shows through the center pin. Then we take and we solder the center pin onto the center conductor of the coax cable using the soldering iron. You don't want to use too much heat here. So now we've got a good solid connection for our center conductor. Then we take our shield. We're actually going to pull this straight so that it is around the back of the connector, and then we will trim it by using these diagonal cutters, and we're now trimming around the outside body. leaving about an eighth of an inch. And we're actually going to take and use and fold this on the back of the connector. Use a little bit of a twisting motion. Might be a few stray pieces of braid that you have to take off. Use a little twisting motion here around the back of the connector. And we'll take our Weller D550. It has to be a good heat iron. We'll take that to the back of the shield and take and put some solder on the 90 degree points of the shield. Here we've got it going, flowing on the back of the shield. Remember, this is silver on the body of the connector, so it takes very well to the solder without a whole lot of heat. But we're spreading the heat around the connector so that we don't have a hot spot and do anything to melt through that tape that is the spacer. And we want to make sure that we have solder at all points. So we're taking and twisting it around. And you can see that the solder is now flowing onto the back of the connector. While this is hot, we're going to take and wrap it with some of our 88 Scotch tape. Now here we go. This will create a nice weatherproof seal on the back of the connector while it is still warm from the soldering that we did. So that is a very solid way to solder a PL259 connector onto RG8 coax cable.
Well, there you go. One more way to solder a PL259 onto your RG8 or RG213 cable. And I can't remember the episode, but I showed in several episodes back how I do it myself. Now, we've got another good video here tonight. Gordon, will you introduce this one for us?
I will. And, you know, a lot of folks are probably going, oh, wait a minute. That's not, believe it or not, that's the way I also solder LMR 400 RG213, because it prevents that little tiny shield hair from shorting out to the center conductor, or when you flex coax cable, it keeps it from breaking loose. And that's where I find a lot of bad connections, where the coax cable connector has actually broken loose from the internal shield soldered connection. So it's a little unorthodox, but it's the way I do it as well. So I'm sure we'll hear more about that from the chat room. All right, kit building is still the rage. And one of our Navy Marine Mars operators, Tim, is going to introduce himself, and he's going to show you what it's like to put together in just 10 minutes, fast forward, the fabulous Made in the USA Elecraft radio. So if we could have that video now, Tim, show us what it's like to put together an Elecraft.
This is Tim Tucker, AE6LX from WorldwideDX.com. I'm in the dining room today, and I'm getting ready to build the brand new Elecraft ultra-portable HF-VHF transceiver. I've got my static mat. I've got all the parts laid out on the table. So let's get started. All right, the first step is to remove all the vinyl tape that is in all the various places around the front cover and around the two side panels. You can see everywhere where it's silver is where I remove the tape. And then we mount the speaker with the felt covering in the faceplate. The next step of the process is to install all of these standoffs. Now, each standoff has a specific place that it goes, and they're all unique, so make sure you read the manual. After you do this, the manual has a very important step that I want to point out, which is taking a straight edge, place it across the corners of the standoffs, and make sure that the bottom of the edge doesn't touch the LCD screen in either direction. This is a safety precaution because when you put this together, it says that if it touches here, it'll touch when you put the case together and crack the panel. In my case, I had missed a lock washer underneath this standoff. and the straight edge touched right there. And if I hadn't have done this step, I would have ran into this process, or into this problem. So again, reading the manual is a good thing. The next step of the process is to insert the control panel board onto the front cover and place the front face bezel over it. You see, I've installed the screws right here. When you do this, make sure you tighten these down, not very snug at first. Tighten them down evenly to make sure that everything lines up properly, and then do a final tighten. Make sure you also don't over-tighten them to crack the board. Otherwise, that's ruined and you'll have to get a new one. Also, make sure you don't pinch the speaker wire underneath here when you're putting the board into the front panel. Now we've installed the VFOA encoder. Here's the backside of it shown plugged in. It's important to understand that there's a little shield that goes between the encoder and the speaker right here. So you want to make sure you have that installed properly. Make sure you're clearing the speaker wires there. And I'll turn it over. And you can see on this side that we've installed the encoder. And there's a lock washer and a nut that secures it into place. You only want to do this finger tight. If you over-tighten this too far with a wrench or something like that, you'll cause this board to twist and damage the board. The next thing to do is to put the side panels on. You can say I put the side panel on here and attach the nut for the mic and the side panel for the other side. Next, the knobs go on. You've installed this flathead screw and this nylon standoff on the bottom of this this battery retainer. And now we're going to take this shield that has tape on it that I've already taken off, and we're going to place it on the stand, on the shield like this, making sure that it's completely flush with this shield. The note in the manual says if you don't make sure it's completely flush on there, you run the risk of shorting out the batteries. Now we've done the next two steps. Mount the battery retainer onto the back of the main control board. And we've taken the back cover and removed all the vinyl tape that was covering up all the grounding points on the back cover there. On to the next step. Now I've installed the heat sink and the serial number and these two rubber feet here. The next thing to do after you install the nylon washers with the rubber feet is to cut these off so that they're flush. Cut these nylon screws down so they're flush with the back. Now we've assembled the swivel out feet, put the end caps on, attached all the screw hardware, and we have added all the screws and standoffs on the back cover here. Now we're looking at the result of the next several steps. First, you place the shield onto the board. You mount the board into the back cover, which I've already done. And then you attach the screws to the power amplification transistors here and attach the BNC connector here. So that's about three or four steps that I've shown completed here. The next step is to install the battery holders. Now, first a little trick. When you're installing the battery holders as well as the main board with all these standoffs and screws, the trick to getting this all aligned properly is to loosen all the screws on the back for the standoffs on the back of the board so that when you put the board on and then the battery on top of the board, they have enough play that they can all move around the board and the battery holders and the screws can all move around so everything lines up perfectly. If you do that, it goes in a snap. If you tighten up the screws on the back for the standoffs and try to align it, you'll have a little bit of difficulty. With the battery itself, this only goes in one way. And the manual talks about this, but the pictures are a little bit hard to see in the manual because in the black and white pictures, you lose a little bit of the color of the red and black. The trick to installing this is to look at this heat shrink right here. This short heat shrink section that's on the black wire that changes to the red wire has to be installed on this left side position. If you try to install this tray over here, it won't fit. You'll never get it. So the short lead, the short black lead with the heat shrink goes on the left side, and everything installs properly. I bought the optional auto tuner board, which is shown here. So I'm going to talk about how to install this. I found the easiest way is to first attach the antenna B and C connector wire where it goes. It doesn't matter which way it goes. And then you can see that there are two sets of pins here and one over here. These align with the two points on the board here and here. So put the wire on and then align this one first, the 4-pin connector first, and then align the 8-pin connector back here visually, and then slide the whole thing down on the board and attach the two screws. So I'm going to go ahead and do that now and stop the camera. Okay, so now you see we've mounted the auto tuner in place. Fits in there nice and snug. The next step is to install the optional roofing filter if you purchase this. This goes right up here next to the battery. There's a little socket for it. The part with the label, the white label, goes towards the battery tray. The other thing it comes with is a little bit longer screw up top here. You can see I've already taken out the other one and started to thread the longer one in place. That screw actually passes through the opening here to help secure the filter in place so it doesn't work its way out when you're carrying it around in your backpack or transporting it. We're on to the final assembly now. I've fitted the two swivel feet in place here, and you can see we do this loosely at first. You don't tighten these down. There's a big caution in the manual that says if you tighten these down, you'll actually grind the screws into the board here and damage it. So you don't want to tighten that down until everything is in place. After that, we find the ribbon cable and we attach it. It's important to pay attention to the manual, which way this goes. It only goes one way. They are labeled on the back, which side goes to the control panel and which side goes to the RF deck. So you put this, push it down in place gently, making sure you're not pinching any of these speaker leads. And then you crease this so that it kind of forms a little U down next to the board. So now we've taken the control panel, attached the ribbon cable from the RF deck to the control panel, and we've attached the battery cable onto the control panel as well. This only goes in one way, it's keyed. This is where you find out if you routed all your cables properly and flexed this properly, because after we install the batteries, we're going to go ahead and close this up and finish the assembly. And when it's closed, if these things pinch, you'll know it right away. So next step is to install the batteries and finish the assembly. So here it is, the fully assembled, ready to go Elecraft KX3 ultra portable transceiver assembled on my dining room table. A couple of final thoughts about the build process. First, this video is not intended to be a substitute for reading the instruction guide. The manual is very well thought out, it's very thorough, and it's very complete, and you should use that as your guide to building this amazing little rig. Second, it's really not that difficult to build this. You can build this in a couple of hours. It's a lot of nuts and bolts and screws and standoffs and some tight quarters, but I really do think anybody can build this, and hopefully this video has encouraged you to take this task on yourself. So, for the Worldwide Radio Forum at www.worldwidedx.com, this has been Tim Tucker, AE6LX, and I hope to catch you on the air from the field with my new Elecraft KX3 transceiver.
Okay, that is terrific. Great job, Tim. And Elecraft is a fun kit to put together. I don't know if Tim had to wind each of those individual toroids, but nonetheless, it's not a huge project. Almost everything on the board already comes wave soldered and stuffed. So, George, back to you. And how was that video, George? Go ahead.
Nice video, Gordo, and it showed exactly how to build that. I'd like to have one of those. That's a nice-looking little kit there. It's a little less work than most of the kits that I take on, but I think just about anyone could do that. And we got a contest this week. Last week, we asked you, what did we ask you? Oh, yes, who invented Morse code? And we wanted the full name. And we're going to give away a copy of this Morse code Breaking the Barrier book, courtesy of MFJ Enterprises. And our winner for this week is David AE7SM. And David said it was Samuel Finley Breeze Morse, but he had a helper on it. You know, Morse only put numbers in the code, and his friend Alfred Vail put the alphabet and the other characters into it. So I did not know that myself. Next week, we're going to give away another prize here from our good friends at cheapham.com. And what we've got here is a SMT soldering course. This is a surface mount training kit. It's got the board and the components, a little solder in here, and instructions on how to put it all together. And our question is going to be, what is the female version of the PL259 connector? Now, if you know the answer to that, and you should, email it to me at hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could be our lucky winner next week. Don, what have we got next lined up in the show here?
I know the answer to that question, as a matter of fact, but I'm not going to tell you because that would be cheating. I don't want to win anyway. I want to give that to someone who can. We have got a Cheryl coming up with the chat room and some talk on field day. And the little Ellicraft got me to thinking, a little bitty radio like that is great to have for a bug out bag. And if you live in an area like I do down here in South Mississippi towards New Orleans, where we have hurricanes, and of course up there by where Amanda is, where you have fires, you need a little bug out bag. And I have a little bag right here. And this bag actually went with me to Arkansas for Hurricane Katrina. I don't have an Ellicraft in there, but I do have, and this is a great radio to have for your bug-out bag, a Yaesu FT817. It is 160 meters through 440. It's basically an HF, an FM handy-talkie. And I've got a little, like a manual screwdriver-type antenna in here to go right on the back of it. And you extend this wherever you need it. And then you extend the coil, and again, it's like a little manual screwdriver, and it all tunes. There's an SWR meter right there on the radio, and something like this is absolutely invaluable to have if you've got to bug out, like I had to, for 2 weeks to Little Rock, Arkansas, when Hurricane Katrina came around. And I didn't make too many contacts with this because it's only 5 watts, but I was able to hear and see what was going on back home. So that's something to think about. And with field day right around the corner, that's a nice little emergency tip because field day is all about emergencies. Let's go down and, or rather up north and see what Cheryl is up to. Cheryl, are you with us tonight, darling?
I sure am. Hi, Don. How are you
with
tonight?
With the hard hat. Nice. Nice hard hat. I like it.
And welcome to everybody in the chat room. And good to have everybody along here. And I love the show so far. Everybody's doing a great job. And I have something for you that a couple of the most overlooked items for your field day, obviously. The first thing that should be on your list before you set up for field day is a hard hat right here. And your safety glasses, the polycarbonate variety, and a good pair of leather work gloves. And I am actually, here I am wearing my Heil purple work gloves. You can see here, they are purple. Lovely. And I already have my stuff, so I just wanted to ask you, where's yours? Remember, folks, safety rules are written in blood. There's no doubt about that. And another good thing that you need for field day is a good RF ground is very important. I think Gordo kind of went over that a little bit earlier. I did not know. It's very important for transmitter operations. What you have here is it will help to dissipate the ever-annoying stray RF sometimes produced at your transmitter location. And also, you should have about 42 to 48 inches maximum for ease of installation and removal. And I have the vice grips on here. I don't know if you can really see that so much here. But the ground, you need to have the vice grips on there because you use this while you're actually pounding in the stake or the ground rod here with your handy dandy sledgehammer, which you guys all know. Yes. You have one of these, right? So you go like this. Some people think this is the way, but if you have a flat edge on your sledge rather than, you know, just going this way and you go whack, whack, whack with your sledgehammer, you actually get better coverage. But I'll tell you what, I have David hold the vice scripts
right.
while I pound it in, just in case, if you know what I mean. He's a little more rugged. He's a little more rugged than I am. And that this basically.
I don't have my gloves on.
But you know, you have the vice script here.
She has missed before.
You know, in case you miss a strike or something like that, and that's pretty much it. So this is actually 6 gauge ground wire, and the green that you see here, it's not necessary. You could use 12 or 14 gauge. You don't have to quite invest it. And this ground rod is made out of solid copper here. I believe it's solid. Is it? Yeah. And if you have to get it out, you wiggle it back and forth and pull and wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. And that makes it a little bit easier. You might want to use 2 vice grips instead of the 1 that you see here. That kind of helps the whole situation. But I highly recommend it, especially if you're using the Big Shot, by CherylTree.com. You remember I had that on a show earlier. It gets a little dangerous. So don't forget the safety glasses. It's just a basic pair here. They come in all kinds. You can get the real nice ones with the mirrored lenses. And if it's sunshiny out, you might get a chance to get some of the sunglass variety. But that's pretty much it for my recommendations. And don't forget your gloves, too, for your kit. They're sometimes overlooked. And safety first. Always be safe, because you don't want to have to be taken away from your field day operations. After all, that's one of the funnest events that we have in ham radio. So enjoy your field day and get on the air. Maybe we'll make a contact. Maybe I'll hear you out there. This is Cheryl Lass at K9BIK. Also, we do have a question. George, I have from Randy, N4RMT. If you had to pick one HF band for a beam right now, what would you pick, George?
Well, if I only could have up one band on an HF beam right now, I would probably go with 40 meters. Since you can talk on that day and night, and a lot of the other bands you can't. That'd be my first choice anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And another question that came in was, you were talking about electrical tape in an earlier video out there, and they said that they preferred 3M 33 tape, Super 33, some of the chat room guys were saying. And I wanted to know, what's the difference between 33 versus regular electrical tape? That's confusing to me.
Well, the Scotch 33 tape is a little thinner tape, and it's good for indoor use. The Scotch Super 88 is a little heavier, and I prefer that for outdoor work just because it's a little bit more durable.
All right, then. That's it for now, and I think I'll have to remove this so you can see that I actually do have some hair left here and not just a piece of plastic, but anyhow, everyone, enjoy your field day. I know it's a little bit of time up, but you can figure out where you want to go or go to 2 different field days, and that's it for the chat room, and back over to you, guys.
Wow, very good. Thank you, Cheryl. And if you do field day with the crew that I do, a good pair of boots comes in handy, too, because it gets pretty deep with the crew that I've done field day with. I was thinking back to some of the field day memories that I've had over the years. Probably the strangest one is a ham standing 6 foot up on an 8 foot tall aluminum ladder erected in a puddle of mud during a active thunderstorm. He's 6 feet up on an 8 foot tall ladder erecting a wire antenna with lightning popping all around. And then another time we were having trouble arcing the support rope over a tree. And my buddy Steve, N5SC, says, I know what will work right here. And he picks up the jar of pickles that we had for lunch, and he ties the string around that, and he just beautiful throw. And just like the perfect pass or the perfect baseball hit, you know, as soon as the ball leaves the quarterback's hands or the off the surface of the bat, you know exactly where it's going. It was a perfect arc, and you could just see it was going straight to missed the tree completely. Perfect arc straight to the middle of the jogging path and just exploded. So that was a couple of the neat field day memories that we had there from South Mississippi with the Westside Amateur Radio Club group. George, any field day memories for you?
Yeah, we went out and did field day last year, Jim and Tommy and I. And I guess my best memory was all the setup and teardown that we had to do. But Jim brought his... he called it a potato gun, but we actually shot apples out of it. It was made out of PVC pipe, and he'd sprayed some hairspray down in it. And he had a little spark generator that came off a torch used with your barbecue grill. And the thing worked good. Tommy stood out there with a fishing pole, and he held it, and it was tied to the apple when Jim would shoot it up in the tree. But Tommy never caught anything.
Gordon, field day memories from you. I know you've got to have some, huh?
Well, field day is fun, and every field day is memorable, and I'll hold them until next week, Don. And again, we encourage all of our viewers and listeners, if you've got some field day hints, let us know this week, and we'll use the best next week. Back to you, Don.
Absolutely. Well, I see by the atomic clock on the wall that it's 9 o'clock Central, and it's about time to wrap things up. So if you guys don't have anything else to add, we may as well just wrap this thing up. So for Bob Heil, who's up at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I'll say goodnight. George, any parting words for us tonight?
Well, parting words are a net, and that is 40 meters is 7.268 megahertz. Echo Link is star, do drop in star, or node number 355-800. And the D-Star network is on Reflector 14 Module C. If you don't have a D-Star radio, you can listen at WX480X.com/listen. 7-3, and we'll see you all next week.
Very good. And now out to Costa Mesa and Gordon. Final words tonight, sir.
We're ready for 40 meters, and our net control has supplied 2 Gilroy onions. Onions?
Garlic.
Oh, garlic. Not onions. Garlic. So we're ready for you on 40.
Garlic.
I bet you could tie a piece of string on those and hum those right up. No, probably not. All right. So from South Mississippi, we'll say goodnight. And for my Oklahoma City fans over here behind me, thunder up. Yeah, I'm from Oklahoma, so I gotta represent. So for everyone involved with Ham Nation, we'll say, good night, Cheryl. Good to see you there. And Amanda, thank you for your contributions as well. So from South Mississippi, for everybody, 73 from Ham Nation, AE5DW. Good night, everyone.